You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 465. Just Tom and John again, back in duo style. Adam White, is he sick of life? Is he sick of himself? Or is he just sick? Or is he sick of you? We'll find out on this episode of Punk News Podcast. Adam White,
or sick of us, more likely.
Sick of us. You think Adam's sick of us, Tom? Sick in general? Sick of himself? Sick of punk rock? Hey, that's not a bad title, is it? Sick of punk rock.
There you go. Yeah, because he's usually the namer of the episodes.
Yeah.
So we have to do the heavy lifting for him tonight and give it a snappy name.
Well, snap.
So, Tom, of course, we didn't start doing that till like 400-something episodes in. I suppose if we missed one, it wouldn't be the end of the world, right?
Yeah, they used to be titled like the week of like September 3, 2012, and then they were like number one.
We got so far out of whack that didn't seem appropriate anymore.
Right, we were really 4 months behind. Well, we're back on Solo Style. We're posting every week.
Thank you to all those of you who stuck with us through those turbulent months.
Those were turbulent months. I can't remember why there was such a hold up. You know, I know we kept recording, but they weren't getting cranked through. I don't even remember why. So.
I don't either. I'm obviously not really up on the technical end of thing. I'm just a guy who, you know, talks into the mic and makes bad dad jokes.
That's
my deal.
Well, listen, you can always reach that podcast at punknews.org. We got a couple of letters. This is from Killtaker. Tom, I'll let you respond to this. Okay. I've never heard DeLonge pronounced Lange or Orange. It's DeLonge, like long, but with starting with a D. DeLong, I guess. Jay from Pittsburgh.
You know, I live in the land of the Dutch, and that would definitely be the simple pronunciation of DeLong would be the right pronunciation. But, I mean, who cares? Killtaker, you're my pal, but who gives a crap?
Yeah, I mean,
let it slide, dude. Let it slide.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you're worried about, like, Blink-182 pronouncing, like there's definitely better ways to
say it. If we're going to make fun of pronunciation, let's make fun of Adam's pronunciation, because he's not here to defend himself, and he's Canadian.
Tom, when did Blink-182 become a, quote, legitimate band? That's what I want to know. Back in the, like, man, like when I was first getting into punk, like, they were, like, a total joke, you know? And now everyone thinks...
I agree, and, it, you know, everybody has their line that they draw. So for me, like, I was just thinking about that because I've been listening. I'm working on a review for one of those kind of popular 90s pop punk bands that is doing a brief reunion, but never really quite reached that status where they were able to make a living. So they only, you know, after a decade or so, they broke up.
Why are you being so why don't you say the name of the band? Why are you being so mysterious?
Well, oh, okay, it's Sicko. Remember Sicko?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I don't remember Sicko. People do. I actually do. To me, they were like one of those bands that were like number like 27 on like the fat comps that I never even like knew about.
But they weren't. And as a matter of fact, if they would have been more in that scene, they probably would have been able to survive. But they were from, I think, Seattle, and they were just they were a little different. They were, honestly, John, they were more Dead Milkmen than Screeching Weasel. They didn't have like the overdriven guitars, and it kind of was. But anyway, I've been revisiting that, and I was like, man, pop punk used to be so good because it was mostly punk rock with just more melody, or maybe, you know, it was basically punk rock with elements of pop. And somewhere along the line, and to me, Blink-182 is the line, it became pop music with a little bit of punk mixed in rather than punk music with a little pop mixed in. And because, like, I mean, if you're 10 years older than me, you're probably going to say that about Green Day. You know, I'll screw Green Day. But to me, I Green Day came up the right way, so I sort of give them a pass. But it was kind of like anything after that, I think, Blink-182 being the most egregious example of a band that really has no business being a punk band at all, or isn't a punk band at all. And I'm sure a lot of people are screaming right now as they listen to this at me, but you know what? Tough.
Who cares?
I'm old and I'm bitter and I'm tired and I don't care what you think.
This is from
Blink-182 blows.
Second.
No matter who the guitar player and singer is.
This is from Marinx, and here's what Marinx has to say. I've been following lots of bands for a long time, but how come anticipated albums never live up to the hype? I'm talking about Joyce Manor and bands like that. Whenever an album is really anticipated, it's never as good as the albums when the band wasn't known. Is it because the bands get nervous? Is it because bigger labels put in money and opinions? I don't know, but it seems like hyped albums never are that good. Green Day's a perfect example, and that's from Marinx.
But it's funny because to me, Green Day, I mean, I couldn't begin to buy into any hype for a Green Day album. So it's definitely perception is a big part of it, right? Like, for example, for me, the Bad Religion album was let down because I expected it to be good.
Can you think of an album that has like months of hype and it was like amazing?
Not on a grand scale. I mean, on a micro scale, on a smaller scale. There's been a lot of albums this year that were sort of comeback albums that I knew were kind of a long time coming that I thought ended up pretty good.
Like what?
Well, like I like the Boris the Sprinkler record. They hadn't made a record for almost 20 years. The Freeze hadn't made a record for 20 years, made a real solid new record. But these are not Green Day type bands. These are bands like a few like people in their mid-40s or older have been clamoring for new music from, you know, not exactly...
I actually feel bad for, like,
big names.
I'm not a huge Boris the Sprinkler fan, but it's like, it's our first album in 20 years. Here it comes. 19 years, yeah. And here it comes. And then, like, people are like, oh, that's cool. And, like to a degree, like, the same thing with Vivian Girls. Like, that album was awesome, but I think they were expecting a little bit more of a pop after it came out, you know?
Like, well, they're selling 2,000 copies or 1,000 copies on vinyl, and that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, as far as physical sales. And it's harder... You know, it's harder to, and I know you're in the same position I am, even though you don't do quite as many reviews anymore, but you know, it's like you have your comfort, you know, your comfort food music, which is basically what you want to listen to when you can listen to whatever you want. But other than that, you're listening to new music all the time for review purposes or just trying to keep up with what's going on. So it's hard to work new stuff heavily into the rotation. I mean, I can only think of a couple albums last year, even ones I really, really liked, that I really listen to regularly.
I gotta disagree with that, Tom. I mean, like, maybe it's because I, like, last year and early, not as much this year, but last year, but early part of this year, I went to a lot of house shows. And man, going to house shows really is how you get, like, the ground level, cool, new happening stuff. Like,
absolutely. That's a great, best way to discover a band that probably won't exist in 2 months.
Well, that's the other thing. It's like, they've got, like, an amazing demo cassette or a 7-inch, and you're like, oh, I can't wait for this band to put out an album. And they just break up. It happens so many times.
Well, John, you're getting to that age, too. And I think I'm sure I've talked about this before, but, you know, indulge me. Where you show up at a house show, and I know most everybody in the internet haven't seen, because it's small, but they like think you're a cop or something.
Honestly,
because you're an older white guy and you're like relatively clean cut compared to the rest of them, you know.
Tom, I got actually kind of bummed out because that happened for me for like real like last week. I think for the first time, like it really happened. I went to see Drill, which is like an up and coming kind of arty noise punk band in Philadelphia. It was Drill, it was a band called Data, it was a band called Decisions from New York, which was really good, a really good hardcore punk band. And what was I can't remember the other band, but the other band was pretty cool too. And Tom, and I don't mean this pejoratively, I mean like, most of the people there were LGBTA, you know? And so, like, at least in Philadelphia, like, there's a
certain... What does the A stand for?
Androgynous, or asexual. I think both, maybe. And so, I'm just wearing my clothes, like, a lot of them are like art school people or art school type people. And I'm just wearing my total clothes. And honestly, like the average age was probably like 23, 24. Mm. And I'm like 36. I'm like, oh my God, like maybe I shouldn't even be here.
You know what I mean? Try it at 46, Jen.
I hear you, bro. I hear you. Should we not go to those shows, Tom? Or what should we do?
You got to keep going. I sort of have a chip on my shoulder about it now where it's like these young kids, and most of the young kids I know are super cool. Once you get to know them a little bit, even though they're much closer to my kids' age than they are to my age, they've been very accepting of me, honestly, probably because they all think I can do more for them than I can. But I think a lot of times you get the pushback like, man, what are you still doing in the scene? All I can think is you'll be so far gone by the time you're my age. But I know you're super hardcore right now, but by the time you're 30, you'll be gone. So judge me if you want, because I've my mere existence has proven my perseverance. You know, my legitimacy has been proven by my perseverance.
Well, the most extreme hardest core guys, they always bust out. They always get into like 5 years ago, like the most hardcore or like yeah, I'm punk. Oh, I love Kanye now, and all I listen to is mainstream hip hop. You know, like those guys always burn out. But
I don't know anybody like that. I gotta say,
I can think of one former punk news editor that really got on my nerves. I defriended him on Facebook because I was becoming someone that I didn't like on Facebook. He would do these posts that were like purposely like inflammatory. He'd be like, you know what, Operation Ivy wasn't really that good, and I'm like, you mother effer, you know what I mean? It's like Operation Ivy is awesome. Like fine, you like Kanye or whatever, that's fine. You know, or like Chief Keef. Or Travis Scott, that's cool. But, like, that doesn't mean you have to diss
on... It's not cool, John. It's not cool.
That doesn't mean you have to diss on Operation Ivy. So I actually, like, started to argue with him. I'm like, why am I arguing with... Like, I'm not the kind of person that argues with people on Facebook. You know what I mean? It's like, why am I doing this?
You never feel good about that. It's never a good use of your time.
Yeah, yeah. So, but anyways, but here's the counterattack, Tom. And I'm not dissing this guy. At a couple of the different houses, actually, depending on the places in Philadelphia, there's a dude that's, like, 55. And, you know, he's lived the punk rock lifestyle. You know, he's pretty broken down. You know, and it's like, is that who I want? Like that's all he's got going on. He's doing the same thing he was doing 35 years ago. You know, like, you don't want to be that guy either. You know,
one of the mainstays of our scene here is, I think, a year or two older than me. So he'd be like 48 or something. And he's beloved. I mean, everybody loves him. Guy's like in his late 40s. He still gets, you know, just annihilated at the shows and dances like a maniac.
You wouldn't want to be that guy, right? Respect.
No. Well, he's got a much different lifestyle than I do. He never married. He just, you know, I have 10 years of, I've been in the scene for 30 plus years, but I have 10 years that were pretty weak because I had real young kids and, you know, it's just, I have a different lifestyle. I'm a total sellout, dude. I live in the suburbs. I have a house and kids and a, you know, job with insurance. And that kind of thing.
I don't think that's selling out, Tom. Well, maybe the insurance part. Well, but I don't think that's selling out.
It's one of those things. I grew up so middle class that it was very... When the time came for me to commit to the real, like, sleeping on floors lifestyle, I just, you know, couldn't quite do it. And, you know, and unlike a lot of these, I think a lot of the greatest bands, the kids just came from a rough background where they had literally nothing to fall back on. And those of us I played music when I was younger, of course, but I was always sort of had that, you know, my parents were poor, but we always had a house and we always, you know, it was always like, you always had that to fall back on. You always knew you could fall back into that kind of middle-class lifestyle.
I don't know if I agree with that either, because Jesse Michael's parents were you know, they were professors and stuff. Jello Biafra's parents were, you know, professors, you know.
My parents were very blue collar. That wasn't, I mean, yeah, my dad was a machinist and, you know, it was fine. We never went without, but, you know, we didn't have it.
But the point being, like the guy that gets that's like 55, 50, that gets like annihilated, like to me, that's very depressing. Yeah. Like, that's not awesome.
It is because I'm 46 and I go out and I like to drink beer at the shows, and once in a while I don't know when to say when, but it's not real common.
Yeah, yeah.
But I never feel good about it. I'm always like, ugh, what an idiot I am. I'm old. I know, you know, because I of course feel like sweet death the next day.
Like to me, it comes down to this: like, going to shows is awesome. But going to shows is not the ultimate virtue. You know what I mean? It's not the greatest thing. Like,
going to shows is awesome, John, but going to the shows and drinking 14 beers is even better.
Well, I'm having this semi-crisis right now, Tom, and maybe you can reflect on it. Is like, so I've been going to a lot. Like, the past couple of years, now that I'm back in the Philadelphia area, I'm going to, like, way more shows than I was a year ago, right? Sure. And I'm like, well, maybe I could be using this time to further my own thing. You know what I mean? Like, just going to watch a show is cool, but... I'm not advancing myself. I'm just, quote, being entertained. So is that any better than just sitting at home and watching Judge Judy, you know?
Well, I mean, yeah, I know. And, you know, we've talked about this before, even a couple weeks ago, I think.
Yeah,
I mentioned this.
Yeah, we did.
Every couple of years, every year, once you get past a certain age, you just sort of have to analyze it and say, yeah, what are we, you know, how am I going to spend the next year? And is it, you know, if for me, it comes down to, you know, should I try to do something where I could, you know, should I try to do something where I could make a little more money? Should I try to do, you know, I like what I've been doing. I've been writing reviews for Punk News for over 5 years. I'm over 400 in, you know. Dude, I've been doing this for a long time.
You're killing it, Tom. You are killing it.
I could use a break, you know, honestly. Yeah. And I might just take a month off. You know how it is, John. Us old school guys. I could take 3 months off and still pass most of the... so-called staffers by the end of summer, quantity-wise.
Well, Tom, you and me, we're kind of like the last of the old school guys.
We really are, and I think it's sort of bonded us in a way that we're sort of like, you know, we are kind of, you know, from the year I started, I think I'm the only one left. And there's a few other people that have been around for quite a few years, but none of them that have really been as active as we have. And obviously, you more or less been the, even though you don't take claim to this, but you've more or less been the captain of the ship for the last 5 years or so since I've been around, even though you've stepped back from some of that stuff.
But, I think yeah, new people don't see me that way.
The times are a changing, John. I don't know that they need us as much as they used to. Well, we might just be podcasters at this point. We might not need to be so active on the site.
Well, I mean, maybe that's not a bad thing. You know, like I've always made a point that I don't claim ownership to the site. I'm not the only guy that makes sense.
I know that.
No, but I'm saying, like, so if people want to come in and start driving the ship, now that's fine with me. You know what I mean? So I don't know.
Yeah, you say that, but now that it's happening, I know it's part of you goes, oh boy, because you know, just like, well, but you're like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want this responsibility, but somebody else starts doing it. I think you're feeling slight pangs of jealousy. I'm just giving you a hard time. Maybe jealousy isn't the right word, but it's like, you know, because you know you made the right decision, but part of you is having a hard time, I think, you know, letting go. But that's all right. But, you know, you and I have been a good team all these years, and I'm sure we'll find some way to keep that partnership going, whether it's, you know, art blowing up buildings or, you know, writing reviews or whatever, talking trash on the internet.
Fair enough. Oh,
but yeah, it's anyway, John. Yeah, it'd be interesting. Like I said, you know, I had that same discussion with myself. I was like, man, should I be, you know, I spent a lot of time doing this stuff. Should I be trying to make a few extra dollars for my family, or should I be trying to do something more for myself? Or yeah, should I be writing a novel instead of wasting my time writing about the new Boris Sprinkler record or whatever?
It's like, should I be wasting my time writing about the new Beardo punk band that has like 30 fans and no one gives a shit about, and no one will even know in like 2 years? You know what I mean? Like, that podcast at punknews.org. One thing that I wanted to mention before we get into the thing proper, Tom, I'm throwing another show despite the fact that I said I wasn't going to throw any more shows this year.
You're continuing your wave of terror as a promoter in Philly.
So November 23 in Philadelphia at Creep Records is going to be a great time. It's the Sonic Attack. It's Rodney Anonymous and Janet Bresler doing Seventh Victim, which is Rodney of the Dead Milkmen's crazy synth punk band, and it is crazy. It's going to be Chris of Crazy in the Brains solo. It's going to be Catbite, which is an amazing Philadelphia ska rock band, which is amazing. And openers, Tom, is going to be Vixen 77, a straight-up five young ladies that do kind of plasmatic-style punk rock, and it is cool. So
Funny, because there was a Vixen, like a hair metal all-female band called Vixen in the 80s. You remember them?
Late 80s? I don't remember them, but I'm aware of them. But this is Vixen 77.
So you remember back in the old days, you know, you get your 10 CDs for a penny or whatever, and then you had to turn your card back in?
I do.
And if you didn't send your card back, they'd send you some piece of crap you didn't want. I remember getting the Vixen album because I didn't return the card.
So you spent like $22 for Vixen on CD?
Yeah, you know, and they had a minor hit song. I think it was called like On the Edge of a Broken Heart or something. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Vixen 77 sounds better.
Well, Vixen, they're real cool, so it's going to be a real good time. It's only $5 to $10 sliding scale. November 23, Creep Records.
So how does that work? How's the sliding scale work?
All right, here's how it works. And you know, there's always Weisenheimer on punk news, but in Philadelphia, it's a pretty well established thing, and it's no problem at all. So you show up, you can pay $5, $6, $7, $8, $9, or $10. You can pay whatever you want to pay. At my stuff,
so it's your choice. You don't say like, hey, you're white, you pay $8.
No.
You're Latino, you were only $5. You're a woman, you're $5. So you're a lesbian, you're $5.
So if
you're a white man, $10.
If you can afford to pay $10, but you only want to pay $5 because you're that kind of person, you can do it, and I'm not going to ask you. But if you only got $5, and you know, and
I'd walk the middle ground. I'd go $7 to $8.
Well, honestly, I used to do that, but then I used to only pay $5 before I ever threw a show, and then I'm like, well, look, I think everybody should pay the same price, so I'm not going to be the sucker and pay for other people, but. That is true in theory, but in reality, it's like, well, it's the promoter that's taking the blow. So if you want shows to happen, you should help out the promoter as much as you can, you know? So at my shows, if you pay $8 or more, you get a secret goodie bag. It's got a free record and some other stuff in it. That's how I beef it up, and it usually works pretty well. Honestly, most people do pay like $6, $7, or $8 bucks. Most people are pretty cool. And honestly, Tom, between you and I, know, like if you don't have $7 to go to a punk rock show, you probably shouldn't be going to the punk rock show. You should probably be trying to figure out how to get more than $7. You know, but even so,
if it means you have to get cheaper six pack.
Well, that's you know, they got people have like a, you know, $8 beer, and they don't have $5 to get to the show. Anyway, but it's only $5, $10. It's going to be a real good time. Lot of special stuff. Oh, actually, and there's other special stuff. Breaking news: we are going to be debuting several EPs there. Chris is going to be debuting his EP, and you have to come to the show to get it. Catbite's going to have an EP, and you're going to have to come to the show and get it. And the other two acts might also have... I'm hoping all four bands do EPs, so we can do a four EP release show, and you can only get them at the show. But we'll see. So it's going to be a good time.
Tommy, yeah, that's interesting. You know, I'm a big Dead Milkman fan, but I've never managed to see them. Now, obviously, this isn't straight-up Dead Milkman, but they do some interesting things.
Dead Milkman actually, like, people don't realize, they do, like, interesting covers and weird set lists and stuff. And I remember in the 2008, 2009, 2010, I had heard that they were really bad live, and I didn't see them when they came out to San Francisco. And then I was back in Philadelphia, and I saw Dead Milkman are awesome live. They sound great. They do, like, 30-song sets. They're awesome live. Like, Dead
Milkman. You know, they were, I'm a big fan of their really early stuff, especially, you know, these young kids that they're talking about. Blink-182 got them into punk. Dead Milkman were one of the bands that got me into punk.
Yeah, but don't compare Dead Milkman to Blink-182. You know,
well, no, but that's what I'm saying is how much better it was for me, because my first. No, I don't mean it like that. I just mean that's the age difference, you know?
So, Tom, do you want to hear the delightful ska of Catbite or the plasmatic style straight up punk of Vixen 77?
Well, John, we've been doing this for quite a few years now. If you had to guess which one I would prefer, which one do you think I would pick?
Vixen 77.
Yeah, you know I'm not a ska guy.
All right, this is some Vixen
77. Other than Operation Ivy.
This is some Vixen. How about Madness and Specials? Not Madness and Specials?
You know, I am not. I have the first Specials album, and I know it's a classic, but it doesn't do anything for me.
See, I like the Specials. I don't love the Specials, but I love the first two Madness albums. Like, the first two Madness.
My favorite, like, ska band is probably, like, AAA, Against All Authority from, like, the 90s.
Really?
I'm just not a big fan of that kind of music. Or the Muster Plug here locally, I've seen about 35 times, but they're
Catbite's defense, they're not that kind of a ska band. They're really more like a Special ska band, or even a Trojan Records ska band, sound wise. You know, more on the Slackers end, but more upbeat. If Slackers did ska instead of Rocksteady, that'd be Catbite. Anyways, this is Vixen 77, November 23, the Sonic Attack in Philadelphia at Creep Records. We'll see you there. And this is Catbite. No, I'm sorry. This is Vixen 77. That was Vixen 77.
Not to be confused with Vixen from the late 80s, all female hair metal band.
That's right.
Maybe now, we'll play that later.
Let's talk about some news this week. Tom, big things are happening in China. As a lot of our listeners probably know, South Park has been particularly critical of China, their especially their human rights violations, and their stance on censorship. And South Park, and I would agree rightfully so, is concerned that China and Chinese corporations are having a massive effect on American media. That is, a lot of the Marvel movies have like pro-Chinese sentiment because there's Chinese investors, and also they want the movies to be popular in China. So they say, oh, China's great in these movies. There was a movie where like they had to like fly to Mars or something, and like China was the company that helped America get to Mars because they wanted the Chinese audience and investors. Another example would be that horrible movie that made tons of money that was just Jaws, but had like Jason Statham in it. Like that was like made by a Chinese corporation. Along those lines, a professional video game player won a Blizzard tournament, and then he did a pro-Hong Kong, anti-Chinese statement, and Blizzard refused to give him his money and banned him from the tournament simply for that. NBA's Rockets general manager, Daryl Morey, did a tweet complimenting the Hong Kong protesters, and then the NBA made him delete that tweet that was pro-Hong Kong and not even necessarily anti-Chinese because they didn't want to muck up their relationship with the Chinese government and the basketball association there. Similarly, Apple approved an app called HKMap.live, and basically it was for Chinese Hong Kong protesters that you could avoid, because the Chinese police will beat the shit out of you, you could avoid the Chinese police and protest. And then Apple, at the urging of China, deleted that app, which is crazy. So here's the kicker. A DJ that I actually honestly never heard of, but is actually a pretty famous DJ called Zed, he liked South Park's tweet regarding their 300th episode. Like he just liked the tweet on Facebook, that's it. China banned him from entering China and canceled all of his shows and most likely made it illegal to play his music in China. Tom, is that scary? And is it scary that we're like going along with that wave as a government or as a nation? Because that's scary as hell, if you ask me.
Well, you have to remember that our government and our corporations are in bed with one another, and China has 2 billion or 1.2 billion people or whatever.
Yeah.
This is all economic stuff, obviously. What's amazing to me is that China has so... I mean, you imagine the amount of manpower you have to use so that you're that on top of...
Yeah,
paying attention to what's going on, that you know that this guy liked a tweet.
Yeah, you're right. They'd have to either follow him on Twitter or follow South Park and like look at the
it's millions. The surveillance state, though. You know, I mean, it's just and we're not much different in this country, if we're being honest.
Well, I would argue that
far as the surveillance state aspect of it, yeah, I mean, our censorship is not like that, obviously, but yeah, you know, somebody's listening to what you say and what you do.
But, I mean, isn't it scary that China has that much control over international media? That freaks me out.
I know what you're saying, that they have so much influence. Yeah, I was going to say, it's a communist country, John. People have been, you know, they do what they want.
Listen, I don't give a shit what China does. That's not true either. But listen, the Chinese
government... Why do you hate Chinese people so much, John?
I love
China. You were just going to say that you didn't care what they did. That, you know,
I love Chinese people. I work with a Chinese guy. I like him. He's nice. In college, my roommate... was a guy of Chinese back. Charlie Wu was a good friend. Actually, in high school, Charlie Wu.
John, you're doing that thing, man. It's fine.
Yeah, you're true. Like, I've got Chinese friends. But the point being is, like, if China's going to do that to their people, like, it's not really our place to stop them because it's unfair for us to police the world, you know? But the freaky part to me is they're controlling American movies. The Marvel movies they're controlling, you know, which is that really scares me.
It's just such a big market, you know? Like I said, it's capitalism. No.
China's telling Apple, one of the biggest companies in the world, what to do. That's scary, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but Apple's always been scumbags.
Well, that's true.
Haven't you gone on, like, anti-Steve Jobs diatribe?
Yeah, I'm very anti-Steve Jobs.
He's dead, and you're still pissing on his grave. You don't care.
Well, listen, he was not a nice person. And I remember when he died, like all these people were, like, really sad in Silicon Valley. I'm like, listen, man, like essentially slave labor makes the iPhone screens. He was extremely mean to people and brutal.
Chinese slave labor.
Right. So it's like, why? This is not a good man. He's smart, but just because he's smart doesn't mean he's good, you know? Anyways, so I don't know, Tom.
Don't you want to work in a factory with suicide nets, John?
Yeah. So I'm freaked out by this. And the only way to fight back is just, you know, to vote with your dollar and tell companies, we don't want, you know, don't go to the Marvel movie or whatever that's, you know, influenced by the Chinese government, you know. But I feel like a lot of this stuff is past the tipping point, Tom. And I do feel a sense of doom and gloom. I don't know if there isn't anything that we can do, you know.
Well, you know, half the people in this country are afraid of the government, and half the people in this country are afraid of the corporations. But until we realize that they're both the same thing, you know, because they've been so good at splitting us up kind of along political lines, Once we realize that the corporations and the government are in bed together, then we can really do something.
I really think it'd be a big difference if people really did vote with their dollar. But a lot of people talk a lot of talk, and they don't vote with their dollar. And
I, you know, we're all guilty of that to a certain extent. You know, I mean, I would much rather go buy my records at my mom and pop shop. But once in a while, I'm just slide that little thing over on my phone, and it shows up at my house 2 days later. And I'll have to go downtown and park, you know?
Well, I will compliment myself that I haven't used Amazon for about 2 years because, like mine, it got hacked and, like, frozen, and I never unfroze it. And I'm like, screw
it. So it wasn't, like, some high ethical ground. It was just a pain in the neck.
Well, I was mad at Amazon to begin with, and that was just what I need to push me over the edge. Like, Amazon is a horrible, horrible company, you know? It's destroyed so many local businesses. It really has. And what's that?
They're not going to destroy the local record store because they have terrible selection of punk rock.
Bezos is like such a creep in that, like, he's ruined so many people's lives, and he's like the second richest man in the world, the richest man, and he still wants more. It's like, why do you want more at this point? There's nothing you can't buy. What's more money? It's like, it's a sickness, Tom. It's a sickness.
No, you're probably right.
It's like, so I think Jell-O might have talked about this. Like, so if someone hoards, like, you know, cats, they're sick. But if someone hoards money, that's like fine. Like there's nothing Bezos can't buy. So what does he want money for? You know, it's a sickness. You know, think of all the good Steve Jobs, think of all the wonderful good he could have done or that Bezos could have done, and he's not doing it. He's just hoarding it, you know.
Well, and you do have, you know, there's the Bill Gates of the world and the Warren Buffetts, and there are people.
There you go, right? So that just goes how.
Because they realize that I can spend $1 million a second for the rest of my life and not spend all my money.
But, Tom, I mean, and not to drag this out, but how sick, you know,
whatever it is.
How sick must it be that you're sitting in your house, not you, but you're Jeff Bezos, you're sitting in your house, and you say, you know, tomorrow I could literally save the lives of 100,000 people or more. All I got to do is snap my fingers. I could save people's lives, or I could make people's lives better for the rest of their life. All I got to do is snap my fingers, and he won't do it.
Where do you draw the line, though, John? I don't know. I mean, it would be nice if people felt that moral obligation, but I don't think it's quite that simple.
I do. He's got what, $80 billion? Give $40 billion. You know, use that $40 billion to improve people's lives. He's still got $40 billion. Tom, what are you going to do with $40 billion? You know what I mean?
It's what, like, am I going to do with it? My records?
Yeah, well.
what are you going to do with it?
If I had $40 billion, I would buy a nice house for about $2 or $3 million. I'd buy a beach house for $2 or $3 million. I'd blow about maybe $500,000 on records. I'd put a couple
cars.
I don't even want that many cars. You know what I mean? I
live in a winter state. I want one of these giant pickups and maybe like a Porsche.
I'd put like a few million aside, you know, $10 million aside for myself. The only $20 million aside for myself. And I would use the rest to improve people's lives, because what else is there? Like, once you have like $100 million, $50 million, what else is there? Fancy restaurants? That's bullshit. Who cares about fancy restaurants? You know, cool cars? That's bullshit. Who cares about that? You know what I mean?
Some people do, but yeah.
But I mean, what?
I don't. But
it's like when you buy a super expensive.
But I've never been. You know, I haven't been to that. Maybe I would like it. I don't know, John. Maybe I would like those.
But things. Like, if you buy like a super high end stereo for like the first week, you're like, "Oh, this sounds amazing! It sounds amazing!" But then after a week, it just sounds like a stereo to you because you're used to it. You know what I mean?
So all I want is enough money that anyone who slightly irritates me, I can have them killed without any trace. So without it getting back, how much money do you need for that?
Do you think Jeff Bezos has ever had anybody killed?
Oh, I'm sure. No, I don't know. I don't want to say that because he's probably monitoring this right now.
He probably. Anyway, speaking of,
I for one welcome our new bald overlord.
Speaking of people reinvesting their funds, Jeff Rosenstock is going to release a live album. It's called Thanks, Sorry, and it is 3 full discs. And it comes with a 76-page photo book by Hiro Tanaka. It was recorded over 4 nights in New York City at the Bowery, I believe? Bowery Ballroom in New York City. And it's his first live album. And people are excited. I know, Tom, you're probably not a Jeff Rosenstock fan. I was a pretty big Bond Music Industry fan. Rosenstock, a lot of it was a little too sad for me. But live, I saw Rosenstock live before he was the Jeff Rosenstock band. I saw him live after Bond the Music Industry, when it was just him, and I never got a chance to see the Jeff Rosenstock band. I missed him like 15 times. It's my own fault. I'm excited for this, but Tom, here's the reason why I think it's going to be a cool record. You probably don't really care about this record, which is fine. But here's what's interesting, Tom. Live records were a staple in the 70s and even into the 80s. Almost nobody puts out live records anymore. I love live records, and I tell you,
I know you do.
Rosenstock,
we don't see eye to eye on that, but that's okay.
Rosenstock is a guy that's going to make a banging live record. I mean, he is great live. He's ideal for live record.
John, how many? Doesn't he only have like 3 full lengths?
He's got 3 full lengths, but he's got like 6 Bond the Music Industry albums.
Okay, so this must be a generational thing because, I mean, Bond the Music Industry had a certain amount of bombasticness to it that I can sort of get the appeal of, but man, can I not get into that band? They just do absolutely nothing for me, and I know the younger crowd loves that, or younger like your age, like people in their 30s love that band, or late 20s. It doesn't do anything for me.
Have you heard Scrambles?
And the idea of a triple live album when you have 3 albums, I don't know, do they? Yeah, this sounds like I made a snarky comment on the site about how I'm going to hold out till the deluxe 4 LP version. It's not for me. And you know, the thing with the 70s, these bands signed all these oppressive record contracts that they had to put something out every year. So if they couldn't put out a studio album just because they were fatigued from touring 200 days a year and didn't have time to write material, they'd put out a live album. So without those record industry pressures, I think that's the reason for the death of the live album. But I mean, most of the 80s metal bands I like have at least 1 live album out or 2. So I mean, it's never really gone away.
It really is no wonder bands in the 70s were all coked out of their mind. Like the record labels rode them to death. Like
you had to tour, and they were all horrible contracts. So like a lot of these bands would be literally platinum artists flying all over the country, and they'd be on like a $40 day per diem.
Yeah.
They would get no money from their managers, and they'd have to sue their managers for money, and the managers were usually really good at moving money around to all these offshore, you know, shell accounts and stuff. But I don't know. Now there's just no money at all. So,
but you're not psyched. So you think there's not that many live albums because there's not that much money, and also because the pressure.
There's no money in it, and I don't mind a live album if there's a reason for it. I just, you know.
Well, think there's a reason for this here? I mean,
I think the appeal of the live album to you, and I kind of get it, is that studio albums have become so sterile, and there's no spontaneity to it. So a live album, you can kind of get that. But if you're listening to some bands, still are able to capture that sort of spontaneous energy in the studio. So, we were talking about the Blink 182 thing earlier, and part of the, I swear, and I've talked about this with other older people, it somewhere in the 90s, maybe late 90s, everything they started using, I heard the never make a record anymore without a metronome. So the drummer's always on a metronome. All the vocals and background vocals are processed to death, and they sucked all the soul out of the music with the production. And I think that's like the pop punk thing. Like the pop punk bands in the 90s still had like a raw, like punk rock production. And I'm going to say that around, you know, that Blink 182, Newfound Glory, that all that crap, it all had pop music production, overproduction, stole the soul from the music. So you might be able to get a little bit of that back in a live setting where they're just, you know, half in the bag and thrashing around.
Yeah, but Rosenstock sounds pretty raw, even on record, even in the studio.
I don't know. I've only heard a bit. So
Have you ever heard "Scrambles" by Bond the Music Industry?
I don't know.
You should check it out, Tom.
I've tried listening to little bits of it here and there. It's got a certain sort of angular jerkiness to it. Like I said, that I could see the appeal of, but it just doesn't. I don't know. It doesn't really sound like punk rock to me.
You gotta check out "Scrambles," Tom. It sounds like punk rock,
man. Life's too short, John. I'm too busy. Too busy listening to records to review.
Too busy to listen to good music, Tom. Is that what you're saying?
And if I have a break, I'm throwing on like Walk Among Us or Injustice for All.
Well, speaking of people getting older within the punk rock scene not wanting to waste time, the Ramones have released a breastfeeding t-shirt. And basically, it's a t-shirt that says Ramones, and it's got 2 zippers on either side. So if your baby needs to feed, you unzip one side, you stick your baby on in there, no one can see anything. And then when the baby's done, you take one out and you zip the shirt back up, and it looks like a normal shirt. Tom, I mean, this is kind of a gimmick and a fad, but I think it's a pretty good idea, you know?
Yeah, why not, right? I mean, I don't know. I assume the Ramones are like every other punk rock band where 90% of their audience are men. But, you know, that'd be cool. I mean, I'm not in that place in my life anymore. But I would have, you know, bought my wife one of those. She'd be so thrilled to be like, hey, baby, I went to the show. Look what I got you. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, well,
you're going to buy one for all your lactating friends?
Probably not, because they're kind of expensive.
Are they? I didn't see the price. Are they expensive?
Yeah, I think like $30 or something. But
that's the price of a regular T-shirt at some of these shows, John.
Well, it depends what show you're going to. But I mean, I wouldn't mind spending $30 for a T-shirt at like a punk show. But like $30 or $45 at like, and it's like made in China. Like, I'm not paying that. You know, if it's made in USA, I'm paying $30. That's cool. But if it's
I think like you go to and I do go to these shows. Like, no, I haven't been to like a big arena like metal show for a while. I think it's $40 is the going right now.
Yeah, Robert Plant was $35. Morrissey was $40, I think. I'm trying to think.
See, when I went and saw Overkill, and I've seen in the last year, I saw Overkill and Death Angel play together and Corrosion of Conformity. I think it's 30 for that kind of second tier metal band.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's still too much, especially for guys like us that have drawers full of T-shirts. Why am I going to spend $30? You know, I'll find some clearance thing for like $10. What do I need it for?
I mean, I'd be willing to spend $30 if it was made in USA or made in Canada or made in England, but it's not. It's made in China. It's made in Haiti. You know, so, but also you can't blame bands fully, because if they're at Live Nation or Ticketmaster shows, they actually take a big cut of that, like up to 40% or more sometimes.
Well, the venue, a lot of times, depending on, usually is at least 15% of your sales go to.
Right, right. So I remember though, in like the early 2000s, I saw Iron Maiden and T-shirts were $65 and people were buying.
No.
Yes, they were. Yes, they were.
How can that be?
Because people were buying them. That's how.
I guess, you know, unlike most of you communist listeners, I am a capitalist. I guess if you can get that, you can get it, but I wouldn't pay it.
Yeah, yeah. Rolling Stones were $40. I did buy one, but it was cool. I was glad I did. That's a little expensive. Like at the punk show, shirts are usually like $15, but I'm willing to pay up to $20 at the punk show. You know?
Yeah,
what I mean?
I'll pay $20 at the punk show. I agree. Yeah. If it's a nice T-shirt, my daughter just bought a long sleeve one that was at a show. I think it was $40. I don't know. Whatever. You know.
Yeah, it is funny how long sleeve T-shirts are so much more expensive than short sleeve T-shirts.
I think it was $30 and $40. Honestly, it seems pretty good. $40 seems like a better deal for a long sleeve than $30 for a short, doesn't it?
Hey, why do you think like long sleeve T-shirts, they do make you look cooler? Like why is that? You know, like,
I haven't had one for years. You know, I used to have a pretty cool Ministry one and a Primus one, but I don't know. I don't really wear them. I don't usually wear sleeves at all. Even though I live in a cold weather state, I very rarely wear sleeves.
Really.
Well, like short sleeves. I don't wear like I don't walk around in homemade tank tops all the time. I do occasionally, but not very
well. In unrelated news, the Damned have released a new single. It's called "Black Is the Night," and it's off the new anthology they just put out called "Black Is the Night." Interesting thing about the anthology, it is not in chronological order. It's in, I guess, what you would call listening order, maybe. Tom, did you check out the song? Are you going to check out the new Greatest Hits album? And what's your opinion of Greatest Hits albums that are not in chronological order?
I'm fine with that. I'm fine with putting them in listening order. I think there's a number of different ways to do it. If you're going to do more of a complete set, I prefer it in like a chronological order. But I think it's okay to sequence them so that they alternate in speeds and kind of vary and kind of work together. I did listen to the new song. I thought it was fine. It's pretty typical of the Damned's, you know, more modern sound, maybe a little edgier than the last album. You know, you go see them live, and I don't know if you saw them live in the last year, so they don't really play anything new anyway. I think maybe they played one new song when I saw them.
Oh, when I saw them, they did like four songs new. I saw them twice in the last year.
Maybe they did a couple. Yeah, you saw them at Punk Rock Bowling. That's right.
I saw them in Philadelphia. They did a ton of new songs.
I saw them at the House of Blues in Chicago. It was a tremendously good show, shockingly good show for a bunch of geezers, honestly.
But not even for a bunch of geezers. It was just a great show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, but especially when you take into account that they're, you know, our parents' age.
Yeah.
But I have an anthology that they did maybe 15 years ago or 20 years ago called Smash It Up.
Oh, is that the alternative anthology they call it? Like the Smash Up?
No, it was just a double disc. It was on one of the British labels. I don't know if it was American or British, but it was a good overview of their career. And then, of course, I think if you're a Damned collector, you got to have Damned, 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 and you have to have Machine Gun Etiquette. And then if you – and I think a good anthology is probably – enough from the like later 80s stuff, but
no way, Tom. You gotta get Black Album. Black Album,
okay. The Black Album, what about Music for Pleasure then?
And that one's kind of, I mean, listen, I've got them all because I'm a damn maniac, you know. But I mean, listen, If you're going to check out the Damn, you got to get Damn. You got to get Machine Gun Etiquette. You got to get Black Album. I would say Strawberries and Phantasmagorium as well, honestly.
Really?
Yeah, huh. I love all those albums.
That kind of gothy stuff, a little of it goes a long way with me, but I don't dislike it necessarily, but I don't know that I want to listen to whole albums of it. But anyway, yeah. I mean, you know, if you're new to the Damned, I'm sure this is a great entry point. But I'm not a huge...
But does it do a disservice? Like the story of the Clash, which was the most famous and first Clash anthology.
That's the first Clash thing I had.
That really did a disservice to the Clash because it opens with like Radio Clash, I think. And the point being is that is not in chronological order, so it doesn't give you an understanding of how the Clash invented punk along with some other bands and then evolved from that. It kind of just made them sound like they were like a weird band that did a whole bunch of different kind of stuff when that really.
They were a weird band that did all kinds of different stuff.
But I mean, there was a progress, you know, to their changing, to their evolution. And this is Radio Clash. I mean, I'm sorry, the story of the Clash robs you of that feeling and understanding.
You know, I've had this conversation in recent weeks, and I think, like I said, I think there's different ways to do it. I think there's a label called Southern Lord that I know you know. They're out of Southern California somewhere, I think.
They don't put out a whole bunch anymore, do they?
But they have slowed down, but they were doing a really nice job of putting out old, like, YDI, the great Philly thrash hardcore band. They reissued a bunch of stuff. The Offenders, a great Texas...
I saw the YDI guy at the Dead Milkman show about 2 weeks ago. Yeah.
Cool.
He's like, if you go to, like, a Philly, like older punk show or like some other punk, like he's around, like that guy's around.
The guy, huh? That's cool. Yeah. But my point was that they were doing anthologies, but they were doing complete like every studio recording by the Offenders is on 2 LPs.
That's the way to do it, baby. That's the way to do it.
And they started with the first EP or demo or whatever and went through it. And they did the same thing with YDI, but it's kind of tough. I think the reason I don't think it works as well as you want it to is, so you got the first demo first, but that's really, really rough sounding. So you're starting out going, oh man, I don't even know if this is any good or not, you know, because it's such a crude.
The first Damned album is amazing.
No, I'm talking the YDI collection.
Oh yeah, I see what you're saying.
But they kept everything intact. So Southern Lord used to do that where they keep everything intact. It would be the first EP, then the first LP. I mean, they keep going, you know, they'd format it on, they put it on LPs. But they would, you know, keep them in order. And I think there's something to be said for that because it's kind of cool. You look inside and it's got the individual artwork. But, you know, for a Damned collection, for one thing, nobody who's an old-time Damned fan is going to buy this, right? I mean, this is for newbies and people who are vaguely interested in the band. I think it's fine that they don't.
It does have a couple rare tracks on it, though. It's got, like, Fun Factory on it, I think, which wasn't ever on an album.
I like a nice compilation, like a two-disc compilation, two-CD compilation. I like that, or a one even, for a band that I don't feel like I need all their LPs. And I think the Damned are more of a need-their-LPs kind of a band than this. But for the casual fan, I'm sure this will be nice.
Fair enough. Tom played...
Is it going to be CD only or LP or what?
I think it's both, actually. But, I mean, like, what's the point of a vinyl compilation? Oh, I want to talk about this with Rosenstock, too. It's the same question. I'm not dissing the Rosenstock record. I pre-ordered it. I'm excited for it. But, like, what's the point of having a live show on 3 discs? Like to me, that, like, does disservice to the art because a live show is one continuous thing. So
yeah, so it's obviously... I mean, yeah, and is it going to be... complete shows, or is it going to be the best of the four nights? Or
it's the best of the four nights weaved together to give the appearance of one show, you know.
On 3 days, so is that LP only, or is that
LP only 6 sides?
So it's probably only about 2 hours total, or something, probably 40 minutes on each album,
right? So but like, I'd much rather have that as a CD so it's not like not broken. Like, they put out a Sleep live album and it's literally one song per side because every song is like 15 minutes long, but it's like, yeah, that's not really what the live show is. The live show is one continuous not break, you know. So I'd rather have that on CD than record, just to have it quote on record.
Same but with, you know, I think his crowd is a vinyl crowd, right?
Yeah, it's for sure, but like with the damned anthology, why get that on vinyl? What's the point, you know?
Well, I don't know.
I mean, what's the point of having 4 days?
You're right, and I've had this conversation recently, too, where it's like, man, I love like what Alternative Tentacles does, where they will, you know, you can buy a CD that'll have a whole anthology on it.
Yeah, well, that's the best way to do it.
But well, and the person I was talking to Neil about, and he, Liverpool Neil, regular writer to the Punk News podcast, and he doesn't like that. He doesn't like that long, that, you know, that 80 minutes or something. It's kind of a slog as opposed to, you know, those EPs where it was like crackling little pieces of music. But but from a standpoint of, I'm not gonna go out and buy all the JFA 7 inches, you know.
Yeah,
you put them all on one CD for me, I'll listen to it.
You can spend $10 or like $400, you know. What do you want to spend, you know?
Pretty much. Yeah. No, I agree, and I love those. Alternative Tentacles has been one of the best over the years.
Yeah, they did.
Any bands that were lost to the world, you know, like the Inbred from West Virginia, or these little tiny bands that would have been lost to history, you know.
The Frantics, amazing Alternative Tentacles.
I gotta get that one,
dude. That one is one.
I gotta get that one.
That one's like one of the best ones. That one is great. I mean, that was real good. Anyway,
Alternative Tentacles did a thing a while back, and I can't remember if we talked about this, but they were doing CDs for $1.
Yeah, that really kind of. I actually ordered a whole bunch, but I didn't get most of them. I didn't mind because it was $1. Like, they got way more than I thought they were. Like, I don't know how they thought that was going to work.
Well, it was funny because I was like, I remember the sale thing, and it was either Friday or Saturday they did it, right? And I'm sitting there watching TV, so I start. I'm like, oh man, because I have a huge chunk of their catalog already. I'm like, oh, I'm going to buy all the stuff I don't have, you know, and I started loading my catalog, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to bed, I'm tired. So I waited till the next day to do it, and like a bunch of it was sold out. I ordered 18 of them, and with shipping it was like $24, right? So of the 18 I ordered, 4 ended up being out of stock.
Yeah.
But it was really... It took almost 2 months to get my order.
You can't get mad. I mean, for a dollar CD.
No, not at all. So, but it took almost 2 months to get my order. I ordered it in July. I got it in September. And what they did, after like 6 weeks of not getting an email or anything, I finally sent an email. I said, hey, I'm sorry to bother you on this. And if you're still working on burying it out, just ignore this. But it's been long enough now that I'm afraid my order got lost. Sent me an email back. We're still catching up. All right, cool. But anyway, so every one of the 4 that they didn't have, they sent me 2 random ones.
Yeah.
So I ended up getting a box of 22 CDs for $24. You know how many I've listened to so far?
Like 2.
0. they're still in the box. Because I just got a bunch of the Spaz stuff on CD too. You know, where it's like all the collected singles, like 67 songs. 67 Spaz songs on one CD, you know.
Listen, if you ask me, Alternative Tentacles, greatest record of all time, But there's a lot of
best label. You think? There's a few that I like, but they're definitely up there.
Yeah, well, for me, because like throughout, they've had amazing stuff throughout their eras. Like SST, great at the beginning, crappy the back. You know what I mean?
We've discussed the fact that SST hasn't done anything to bump the sound quality either.
Yeah.
They almost like take pride in the fact that all those spot records still sound like crap.
I think they do. I think,
the thing with Alternative Tentacles at this point, it's still a good label and they still put cool stuff out, but they've almost kind of settled into just being sort of a chronicler of the bass scene.
That's true, Tom.
I mean, they put out the new Darts record, but other than that, what's the new thing other than the Darts that's like a new record that's not like one of the old Fleshies related, or you know, one of those old Nausea related, or one of the old Bay Area bands that's been kicking around? World, that's mostly what they do now.
World Inferno, X Girl.
Well, that's right. They didn't work for them. They did the what's that one that you really love? That Miss Your Brew. They did a Miss Your Brew. But yeah, no, there's a few other things, but it's not. They don't. I don't think they're as aggressive about putting up stuff as they used to be in their heyday.
Well, I think that's a financial thing more than anything.
Yeah, that's true too. There's no money in it.
They have put out a few really awesome.
I mean, Jell is like 65 years old. I mean, he's not a kid, you know.
Tsunami Bomb's coming out, which I'm excited about. They put out a record that
again, that's a connected, you know, that's got a connection to the label. It's not a...
They put out a record by this band that no one cared about called Silver Machine, which is actually like a really good record. Like, really good. You should. But the point being, Alternative Tentacles is the best label of all time, but there's a lot of junk on there. There's a lot of stuff that it just is not good.
Well, dude. It's just, Jello liked a lot of weird stuff.
Yeah.
That even to those of us who like weird music was kind of out weird, there. But you know, the thing is too, you know, a lot of the underrated stuff... Like, he put out, like, Slim Cessna's Auto Club albums and, like, Dash Rip Rock albums, which are sort of, like, freaked out country records. But, man, they're really good. You know, there was a lot of cool stuff.
That's the cool thing, but also the problem of alternative tentacles is, you know, Epitaph Records, you know what it's going to sound like. Yeah. Fat Records, you basically know what it's going to sound like. Hellcat, you definitely know what it's going to sound like. Alternative Tentacles is all over the map, so the only identity is it's cool bands that Jello likes, you know? And so
I would argue that Fat, at this point, and this is a label that's meant a lot to me over the years, every record sounds so much the same that I can't even care anymore.
Yeah.
Overproduced. It's the production thing. It's that production thing we were talking about earlier. Everything is produced to death.
Yeah. So anyway, Tom, speaking of produced to death, let's play a track and we'll come back and we'll wrap this bad boy on up with a few quick stories.
I don't have a track, John.
Oh, you don't?
All right, you caught me like flat-footed. Like I told you I'm at zero preparation.
All right, well, I got another track. Then. So
play the stupid Cat Bite frickin' ska track.
Catbite is not stupid. Catbite is awesome. And here's some Catbite coming at you. November 23, Philadelphia at the Sonic Attack. Catbite, Vixen 77, Chris of Crazy in the Brains, and Ronnie Anonymous of the Dead Milkmen with Janet Bresler as seventh victim. Here is Catbite. Catbite, Tom, a band.
John, you got your announcer voice on today. You should seriously consider getting into like monster truck calling or something.
Sunday.
Exactly.
Come down to Gravedigger, watch him bury 10 beat up.
Of course,
cars.
Now that you're back by the city, you're probably away from that, right? When you were out of the city more, that was more that scene.
Tom, have you ever been to a monster truck rally?
I have not.
I have not, but I would go.
I went to like one of those like Supercross things once where they were jumping motorcycles inside an arena. That was pretty cool.
Was crazy. That awesome or was it boring?
No, it was pretty awesome, honestly. Mm-hmm. My son Gibson, who's like 20 now, was like 4 years old or 5 years old or something. I don't know. It was fun.
Well, speaking of things that are dangerous to be around, Harley Flanagan, he's putting out a new EP. it follows his previous EP called Don't Give In. The new EP is called From the Grave, and the title track includes some contributions from Phil Campbell of Motorhead. And I gotta say, Tom, I think you and I agree, we are in somewhat of a golden age for Harley.
Sounds good, man. Sounds really good. And I think everybody who – I didn't really see any – I think everybody who likes that type of music agrees. I love the guitar solo. I love the Phil Campbell guitar solo. I love everything about this. The thing that's irritating me about it, honestly, is that we got 2 3-song $8 EPs so far. 7 inches. You know, it's like, are we going to do an LP, or are we just going to, am I going to spend $40 over the next 2 years buying Chromag 7 inches?
What appears to be a victory in true, listen, Victory knows how to make money. They know how, you gotta get, they know how to make money. They know how to market.
Victory,
music.
A subsidiary of something, something global holding company, right, or whatever, right. We talk Concord Music or whatever it was.
It appears they're going to release like 3 or 4 EPs and then just put it all on an album with a few extra tracks or something.
Oh, you know? Should I hold out? Cause I didn't buy the first one yet.
You got, honestly, you got to get just to support, like I want Harley to keep doing this stuff because this is awesome. So if it costs me $35 to get these songs, I'll do it just because they're so awesome.
Well,
like,
you know what I mean? What do you feel about that? I mean, obviously, I wonder if John Joseph ever really had the legal rights to the name, or if he just started using it. But it obviously shows you who really was the moving force behind that band, because John Joseph never did any music.
Well, he did do a couple of bands, and I'm
he did the Blood Clot album, which actually I thought the Blood Clot album was really good.
So you and Ricky love that, but I thought the Harley album was
it was good, man. It was really good. It sounded like Chromags. I liked it a lot.
The songs for me were twice. Every song was twice as too long as it needed to be.
But it was also, I think the force behind that was Todd Youth, who's dead now. Even though I heard they're going to make a new album, maybe if he hooks up with a good guitar player, maybe he can. They can make some new music. But yeah, they never did I'd like to say that the reason they never did any Chromags music over the last 20 years is like out of a respect thing, but you know, he didn't respect it enough to, that wasn't the reason, I don't think. But
he also had that band Both Worlds, you know, and I'm not defending him, but it was kind of like
I've always felt for years, and you know, I think we've had this conversation on either on or off the pod, that I always felt like Harley was the problem. But I think I've come around on that. I think JJ is the pain in the neck, and I think you have some inside information on that, and I'm not going to ask you to share it. But I think
you know where I stand, Thomas. You know what I mean?
You're on Team Harley, right?
I'm on Team. I support.
Just because you don't think that John Joseph will stab your ass.
I think Harley is a fun. I think Harley's making the best music. I think he's making some of the best music of his career.
I think that Best Wishes. I know that Age of Coral was the gold standard, but honestly, I think it was 1 and 1A with Best Wishes. I think Best Wishes is phenomenal.
I can't agree with that, but I am coming around on Best Wishes more than I used to be.
The problem for me is, you know, you probably started listening to them when they were long done, and the fact of the matter is, Best Wishes was the first thing I ever heard by them. So that was my intro to the band, and your intro to the band record it's always hard to get over the intro to the band record. Unless it's a crappy record, you know. Not, so I always love the Best Wishes album.
It's not hard to get over when your first Squaw album is We Kill Everything, which is unquestionably the worst album. Great entry point because it's hilarious, but then you get the better.
Hey, you want to talk about Guar for a minute?
Well, actually, I want to talk about Chromags, and then we can talk about Guar. But we should talk about Guar. You're right. But so with Best Wishes, I think I would have liked that more off the bat if it does suffer from 80s production. Like, if it didn't have that 80s production, I think it'd be a lot.
It's definitely metal, man.
And the other thing is, like Harley does that, wah! Kind of, like, if he didn't do that, I think I would like it a lot. Although I do like it now, actually. I was just listening to it yesterday or the day before.
Oh, but, like, Kill the Demoniac, Death Camps, all those songs are so good, man.
They are good, but it just has those two flaws that I think make it not as good as Age of Coral.
But Age of Coral is a very crude-sounding record.
Yeah, and it sounds awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. I mean, it's, you know, it sounds like 80s hardcore, but
I don't think it sounds like, I think it sounds better. I think it sounds raw and looser than 80s hardcore. But interestingly, if you read the Harley Flanagan autobiography, he doesn't like the sound of the album, which really surprised me.
Well, and like I said, my entry was Best Wishes, so I'm always part of it. I mean, I recognize Age of Coral is better, but it's not much to me.
Well, anyway, the new Harley stuff is, I mean, honestly,
I also despise, like, the Alpha Omega stuff. I think it's horrible. I know a lot of people have defended it over the years, but it is awful.
Everybody involved in that says it's bad. I mean, pretty much everybody agrees that the only good Chromag albums are the first two, and Harley says Revenge has some okay tracks.
Revenge was decent. I mean, I bought Revenge and in the real late 90s, early 2000s, and there was Before the Quarrel, I think it was called, which was like the original demos, and those are pretty cool, too. I don't know if that album's still floating.
Yeah, before the Quarrel is actually the original Age of Quarrel that they sold as a demo tape, which is now $300. But
because that was for a while there was, I think it was Cro-Mags Records, and they were selling that stuff. Because Revenge had Harley in Paris, right?
Right.
I don't know who's playing guitar. I mean, Paris isn't in the current version.
It might be Gabby. He's in Harley's band now. I don't know. Anyway, it was funny though. Is not to delve too deep into this, but if you look on Facebook, a certain member of the Cro-Mags was trying to beef again, and it's
yeah,
like,
I saw that.
It's like, dude, it's like it's been two decades of conflict. The conflict is over. Why are you beefing now? You know, just let
because he had the run of the place for 20 years.
Yeah, I hear you.
And I always wondered how, after Best Wishes, how Harley lost control of the band, or did he? Was it just?
I think the answer is it was very unclear. And I don't think like John Joseph had like a contract and said, "Oh, I own Cro-Mags now." I think he just started using it, you know.
Yeah, that's kind of the impression I got too, but yeah. I don't have any inside information on it.
Well, I don't think we're going to get it, and nor do we want to get it.
So the problem is for a band like Cro-Mags, you know, the Misfits beefed on each other for years, did not like each other, but ultimately, the Misfits have so much, there's so much money on the table that eventually they couldn't resist. And I know it was, you know, we found out later that it was to settle some lawsuits and some other things. But the bottom line, it came down to money. And the problem with a band like the Cro-Mags, man, they could get back together and maybe do a club tour, theater tours. But, you know, they're playing small clubs.
They could hit two or three festivals and really get a lot of cash.
That's what I was going to say. They could be, because every year now, Riot Fest for the last six or eight or ten years has been a reunion. You know, Misfits big. Bikini Kill, this year, which, you know, I would like to see that Bikini Kill show. I think that'd be great. But, you know, once again, not anywhere near like the Misfits level. Or even, you know, Jawbreaker a couple years ago, same thing.
Yeah.
Huge for a very small audience, but not like a, you know, because I saw the Replacements year, and I saw the
Iggy. How was that?
Great. It was great. Replacements were great. It was the only time I ever got to see them, unfortunately. I love the band. I'm not ideal circumstances, obviously, standing in a crowd with, you know, 40,000 people, but they were great. And Iggy and the Stooges were great.
Oh,
they
were one year.
That was when...
Did you see the Stooges, or you saw Iggy and the Stooges?
I saw Iggy and the Stooges.
Yeah.
But it was good. But anyway, the Cro-Mags, yeah, they could be the Riot Fest, you know. But I don't know. I don't know if they'll ever bury their. I'm afraid if they bury the hatchet, it's going to be in the back of somebody's head.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen. I mean, the work kind of speaks for itself, and Harley is killing it right now. Like Harley,
he is, and it's like, two good EP. You know, six solid new Cro-Mags songs.
I don't know what Harley could be doing that would be better than what he's doing. Like I think this is this is it. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, for an older, you know, guy his age, and yeah, no, I think it's good. I shouldn't even qualify it. It's just good.
And not to drag this out, but Tom, one last thing is I was surprised that like this wasn't bigger news than I thought. I guess because people are just tired of the conflict. But first new Cro-Mags in 19 years, it didn't like explode the internet, you know?
Well, but you know, because they never really went away.
Yeah, yeah, true.
So, yeah.
So, Guar.
I'd go see either version of them if they came to. I've never seen any version of them. I've had opportunities a couple times to see the John Joseph version, but never.
Harley version is awesome live. The Harley version is awesome live. Guar, Tom, I think you and I had slightly different opinions. I think you were slightly negative and I was slightly positive.
Yeah, I was not. Obviously, you know, for me, and I mentioned this, we both reviewed them about a week apart, right? For me, it was all about the opening bands, and I spent a lot of time on the opening bands. You did not touch on the opening bands at all, so let's talk about that first. What did you think of? Were you not into the opening bands, or you just didn't see them, or you just didn't feel like writing about them?
I saw them. I didn't feel like writing. I mean, Toxic Holocaust to me, it's a fine, acceptable thrash metal band that is aware of the rules of thrash metal and stays firmly within those rules and doesn't do anything that special or that interesting. So to me, like
so good at what they do.
Yeah, I've heard it all before.
I don't argue with that, but they're so good at it.
I mean, they're good at it, but I've heard Slayer and Celtic Frost do it better. You know,
I mean, yeah, the two best at it ever. I mean, that's a pretty high standard to hold them to.
I've heard Exodus and Anthrax. The new record is great.
I love the fact that, you know, the two biggest of the like post 2000 thrash bands are Municipal Waste and Toxic Holocaust. But I love the contrast because Toxic Holocaust does have that little bit of venom. They have that really, that little bit of really nastiness. Plus, I love, they sound like Kill 'Em All Metallica meets Venom. I love them.
Well, I do like that Toxic Holocaust does have that blackened metal edge. But to me, I Toxic Holocaust would probably be like one of my favorite bands if they did just something weird or unexpected in the music. But they never do anything weird or unexpected. Whereas like
they're speed metal punks, man. They do what they do. You know,
see, to me, High on Fire is what Toxic Holocaust should be.
Well, but that's a different. High on Fire isn't bound by thrash. I mean, they're not really a thrash band.
It's metal guitar played quickly and banging riffs. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So it's got more. It's a little bit more of a stoner element to it.
Except with High, I wish High on Fire would change it up a little bit more. Like High on Fire rules, but every song is like the same tempo and the same.
Man, fit. They're on tour right now with a really great looking tour. Was it Midnight? And Midnight's another like kind of.
Oh, you like Midnight, Tom?
Oh yeah, yeah, of course.
Devil Master's on that tour too.
And I was gonna say Power Trip, who was another one of the really of the newer thrash crossover bands. Power Trip is one of the newer. They've been around for 10 years. No, you don't like them, huh?
I like them, but to me, it's like okay, we're doing Slay with a little bit more grit. You know what I mean?
A little more of a hardcore punk influence. They came out of the hardcore punk scene. Listen, John, you can go listen to your xylophone music. I'm going to listen to some thrash.
Fair enough. I will.
but as far as Guar goes, so I also enjoyed Sacred Reich. I'd never seen them before. Kind of an underrated second tier,
definitely, yeah.
From the late, what's that?
Second tier. I mean, and I mean that as both an insult and a compliment.
Yeah, no, they were definitely not.
Like they were good and they were cool, but there's a reason why they weren't as famous as Slayer or Metallica or Anthrax.
Yeah, I really enjoyed them too, but I'd never seen them. And my boys Against the Grain, you know, they'd gone a little bit more of a stoner direction than I would have picked for them, but they're pals of mine. I like seeing them. I don't get to see them too often anymore.
I've seen that band like so many times just because they're on so many tours.
Used to tour relentlessly. Mm-hmm. This Guar tour is like 6 weeks, but they don't tour like they used to. They're getting a little, you know, they're in their 30s now, or getting close to 30, and they don't. But they spent a decade just busting their butt on the road. But as far as the Guar show, I admitted to leaving a little early, but. I thought the storyline was pretty uninspired, and it was pretty obvious even to them that the storyline was uninspired.
I thought the storyline was very inspired, but the execution of it was poor.
See, you know, the funny thing is, I wasn't even drinking, which usually I drink, so maybe I would have. So that might have, like, colored my perception. It might have made me a little less amenable to the fun. I thought it seemed tired, and we've discussed the fact that some of the tours are more tired than others, and I definitely thought the last couple were pretty sharp again, but this one did not. I didn't think it was too good.
I think the tour's over, but so the storyline is that Guar is on trial, and the concerts in
they're still out, dude. It's like 6 weeks.
All right, well,
the show I saw was the first of the. All the bands.
Well, spoiler alert then. Here's the storyline.
Oh, so, dude, I wrote, you and I both wrote about it.
So,
we assume our podcast listeners are unable to read, right?
We kind of do, honestly. So Guar's on trial and the show's in a courtroom, which I thought was really funny. And so they're on trial for like murdering and killing people and parking in handicapped space, which
it's in a courtroom, John. I mean, they have a couple of TVs set up. I mean,
that's why I thought the idea was great. The execution was poor. Like back in like the late 90s, early 2000s, they would have had like a jury bench, the judge's bench, you know, the witness stand.
But they don't play as for as people as they did back in those days. They don't draw like they did back in those days.
They don't, that's true, they don't. But what I'm saying is the idea was that Guar's on trial, there's a judge, and for some reason the prosecutor was the toilet from We Kill Everything, which didn't really make sense. You know, it would have been funny if they had like some other character, you know what I mean? And so they're on trial, and of course they're found guilty, and then they fight the judge and kill the judge at the end. I think that's hilarious, and they bring out witnesses to testify against Guar, which is hilarious. That's really funny, you know. But like the actual execution, like it didn't really look like a. Instead of having like the judge at the bench, the judge was on a video screen. Like, why not have the judge on the stage the whole time? You know, wouldn't that make more sense?
The last time I saw them, and they used those cheesy video screens like that, it was really bad too.
Yeah, the video screens are really a crutch. You know.
But they brought up like the Caitlyn Jenner thing. I mean, have you ever seen? I mean, I look as much like Caitlyn Jenner as that.
Tom, I disagree. I thought that was a very well done Guar caricature. Like, that's what the character should, like the Michael Jackson doesn't really look like the Michael Jackson, but looks like a character of Michael Jackson. I thought the Caitlyn Jenner was, I disagree with you, Tom, completely on that.
I guess we have to agree to disagree. I assume you were standing out of the splatter zone also?
Yeah, I'm too old for that, honestly.
Yeah, you know I mean, I literally, like, was gauging the, like, trajectory of the semen, the fake semen.
I mean, honestly,
to make sure that I was, like, out of the... I see these kids walking in their white t-shirts, like, yeah, that was me in, like, 1994.
Honestly, it's pretty grimy because not only do you get sprayed with this stuff, like, you're all sweaty and gross, but also, like, the water isn't strictly... It's, like, it has corn syrup and stuff in it, so it's like, pretty grimy, you know what I mean?
But yeah.
I thought the music actually was really good, Tom. I thought
they played well. I mean, I thought they sounded pretty good, and they played well. I just, you know, I think... Ultimately, I look at them as a performance art band, and their music to me is just doesn't hold up.
I thought the set, I disagree 100%. I think the albums are amazing. I thought this set list was really cool because they did a career spanning set, and they played a lot of rare stuff, including Gwar theme and Crackdown and some other rarer stuff. And they didn't do some of the.
I don't know their music that well to get excited about. Some obscure.
Well, you should listen, Tom. Right. Gwar is amazing. Gwar.
Nice to sure, John. I don't have time to listen to Bob in the music industry or Gwar.
You don't have time to listen to what is probably the best heavy metal band to ever exist. Well, that's on you, Tom. Gwar? That's on you. Yeah.
The best Gwar. Heavy metal band to ever exist?
On some day, them, Slayer, or Judas Priest, definitely. Or Sabbath.
I'll take the first four Metallica albums any day.
Oh, Gwar destroys Metallica, if you ask me.
Dude, the first four albums.
Those albums are too,
I mean,
like.
I mean, I know not the Black Album or freaking.
Tom, you need to just go listen to Scum Dogs of the Universe. That album is amazing.
Maybe I'll try to YouTube it. Listen to it for free. Steal some music.
So anyway, John liked Gwar. Tom said he didn't like Gwar.
I mean, I had a good time overall. I thought the package was good, but I really liked the openers, and you didn't, and you liked the headline. I just, you know, I thought it was, I didn't feel bad about spending the $23 or whatever it was.
No, it was only $18 in Philadelphia, which honestly
I was actually a little irritated because there were 20 in advance. So I roll up, like, find a spot right across the street from the box office, make sure there's no meter maid coming or anything, run across, buy my ticket, got my $20 bill in my hand, $22.50. I'm like, did it go up? I'm like, a week of show. I'm like,
brutal. But I mean, honestly, like I do feel bad for Gwar in that, like, it was not nearly as packed as it used to be, but also ticket prices are going down for that band, which is...
Yeah, and I saw them on a Monday, which is always, you know, always a little tough.
And you know Toxic Holocaust, I mean, he's getting something, you know what I mean? Or
he's got to be. Yeah, they have to be. And even so, against the grain, I know they're not a big name, but the fact of the matter is they're on this tour for 6 months. They got to be getting a few hundred dollars every night. Toxic Holocaust over $1,000 a night band. I don't know what, you know.
So you break it. Gwar might only be getting like $9 a ticket, you know, when you really break it down.
Yeah, I mean, I assume, you know, I'm going to guess that Toxic Holocaust is in the $1,500 range and that Sacred Reich's in the $2,500 range.
I would ask, who played first, Sacred Reich or Toxic Holocaust?
Toxic Holocaust.
Yeah, so maybe like $2,000. Honestly, a lot of these bands get way less than you might think they get.
Oh, I know. There's not that much. But and I'm just guessing. Yeah, maybe it's – and maybe Against the Grain – I hope Against the Grain is not getting like $200 a night. You know, I hope they're getting 500. I bet you they're about $500
maybe,
a night. But,
yeah, maybe. But I mean, honestly like, –
But I don't know because, you know, these are guys with – it's just tough. These guys, you know, these are guys that are 30-year-old guys. Some of them have families and houses and jobs and – But they've devoted to being road warriors, so they, you know, they do what they got to do. But
everybody got to do what they got to do. Tom, any last words for the listeners on tonight's episode, an extended Tom and John episode where we just kind of rapped about stuff and, you know, went
to the topic. Another classic in the making. The problem without we're used to Adam like is the kind of been handling the production end of it. So we'll see if this episode actually ever gets to the people.
Yeah.
The last Tom and John episode, which I thought was pretty good, took weeks. So we'll see.
I'm going to try to mix this tomorrow night. So we'll see. So you can reach that podcast at punknews.org, and we'll see you next week. Maybe Adam will be back. Well, who knows?
Smell you later. Cool.